You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another episode of the M Squared TechCast. This is our second one on Zoom, I think, Mike.
Yep, our second virtual session. But I think we'll be doing this probably for months to come. Hard to say that. I don't think we'll be back in studio for a while.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's what it's certainly looking like out there. It just keeps getting crazier and crazier, worse and worse. And we have a good show for you here. We have a lot of information about the coronavirus pandemic. We have other tech information for you, as we usually try to. This show tries to cover the high-tech scene in Michigan. And we're starting out. I don't have my shameless plug bell with me. I don't know if we have one there in the studio, Mike. But we usually ring a little office bell when we plug our own employers. And so I'm plugging my own employer today and doing a little bit of self-congratulation for Lawrence Technological University. We have Lynn Miller. Pronounce your last name for me, please. I only know how to spell it.
Wetisha.
Okay, Lynn Miller Wetisha, and she is director of e-learning at Lawrence Tech. And e-learning is something Lawrence Tech, like every institution of higher learning, has had to get really good at in the last couple of weeks. Basically, during its spring break, the first full week of March, Lawrence Tech made the decision to cancel face-to-face classes for the rest of the semester and move to an online class model. And we extended our spring break by a week to give us a little more time to do that, and then started online learning full-time March 23rd. Lynn, I want you to tell us a little bit about how this was accomplished and how many classes were moved. What happened to make us go completely online?
Well, the virus made it so that we couldn't have people come to campus. So as we moved everything to social distancing and working from home, that affected all of our faculty and our classes. So we were very fortunate that the president and the provost and the cabinet extended break a week. That we had lucky timing in that. Not every institution was as lucky. We had a week to work with faculty to prepare, because we moved about 800 courses being taught by just under 300 faculty online in a week. So we were able to use that week to train faculty, get things in place, get course materials in place, get everyone up to speed with some of the learning tools, the technology tools that we have available to us. So we benefited from that week, and the students came back the following Monday, and it was almost as close to business as usual as you can get. A lot of our faculty communicated to their students and said, "We meet on campus on Monday and Wednesdays at 11 a.m. We're meeting on Mondays and Wednesdays at 11 a.m., but it's going to be via Zoom. And here's the link. I'll see you on Monday." That's okay. How most of our classes went.
So the classes that Lawrence Tech is offering online look kind of an awful lot like what people are looking at right now, right?
Well, not exactly. When Lawrence Tech has a class that goes online, when a decision is made by a department, a college, to take some courses online, we start working with them at least a semester in advance. We map out the course. We map out the modules. We look at learning activities that will go really well into an online format. We work with the faculty, and we try to record some production quality lectures. We look at if we need to bring in lab components, if we need to bring in simulations and those kinds of things. And we work a good semester in advance to build that course so that when it launches at the start of a semester, all our faculty have to do is teach. The material is loaded, the activities are loaded, the exams are loaded. in this situation, we didn't have that luxury. Our faculty are kind of doing it and teaching at the same time. They're recording lectures and putting exams online at the same time that they're conducting their courses.
So you guys at Lawrence Tech, though, you had something going on previous, and now you've just expanded it to the entire curriculum, right?
It might sound nitpicky in terms, but one of the things that I and my colleagues in e-learning and distance education are trying to do is to not call what we're doing right now online learning. Yes, it's we're all online and that we're on the internet and we're using online and digital tools, but there is just a slight distinction. What this is really, I've heard it called emergency remote teaching. And some of the reasons why my colleagues are making that distinction is that we don't want faculty and students to think that this is what an online course encompasses. Because like I said, an online course, we've built all of the materials. Our faculty are in front of green screens and doing their lectures with images superimposed. It's a much more production quality course when we go online. LTU does have we have entire degrees online, and the courses are made to that quality. This, we're trying to just distinguish so that we're managing the expectation to the degree that we can.
All right, so what programs did Lawrence Tech offer online already? I know there was a Master of Architecture, right?
We do our entire Master's of Architecture online. We have the Business and Information Technology Master's online, Master's of Civil Engineering, Engineering Management, Industrial Engineering, our Information Technology program. We have quite a few graduate certificates that are also available online, Building Information Modeling, for example. And again, all of those have been produced with a lot of time and preparation to make sure that they're really good quality courses that have all of the ingredients that we know make a good instructional experience for students.
Talk a little bit. I know when people think of online education, if it's just a straight up lecture, like a lot of the courses I had for my, you know, squishy little liberal arts degree, you know, it's just a straight up lecture, and then you read some material, and then you either write papers or take a blue book about what the professor has said and what you've read, right? You know, they ask you questions and you elaborate on an answer. That strikes me as pretty easy to do in an online format. More technical courses like Lawrence Tech offers, there's a lot of lab work involved. You have people doing physical experiments, mm-hmm. people building physical objects. How is that handled online? Talk a little bit about that if you could.
Well, again, it was the great week that we had to prepare. So we had a lot of our science faculty and some of our engineering faculty actually come into the labs, and they conducted the labs themselves. And we sent a camera crew to record them doing these labs. And then we worked with them to edit those lab videos and put some embedded questions in there so students could actually comment in the video about why this step in the procedure was necessary. What is the next step? Yeah, we could ask students that in the video. And then the faculty sent the data sets to the students so that the students could still do the data analysis for those labs. So it's not as quite the same as being there, but given the situation, it was a pretty good proximity.
Yeah, I talked to one mechanical engineering professor who talked about a heat transfer experiment where you have, it's for an HVAC application, basically, mm-hmm. you know, like a furnace or an air conditioner. You have two mm-hmm. metal plates and they're instrumented to, you know, so you know how hot or cold they are. And you heat and cool the metal plate, and that metal plate radiates heat or cool to the other metal plate. And you measure the rate of heat transfer. There's a whole bunch of complicated math involved in that. Yeah. And he said he did that experiment with a camera right in front of the plates. And some of the students said they actually liked it better because they had a better view of what was actually happening.
Yeah, we in some of our labs, we've sent two cameras so we can get two different angles, and we're miking the instructor so we can get we can get those different angles, and we can actually see, students can get those better views. And we also have the ability to do it live so that if we wanted to like we're streaming this, if an instructor wanted to stream a lab and actually have students interact during that experiment, we can do that. We're waiting to see how long this continues, if we're going to have to go all through the summer. If that's the case, then we're going, faculty can still come to campus. So we would set up individual appointments with faculty to come into their labs and, using appropriate social distancing, record more labs to do more, more development of content that could go in our online courses. And what's good about that is we can use it next semester. So once we capture these things, even if we are back on campus, we can still use that footage to reinforce what the students are learning.
Yeah, I wanted to talk to you about that. About you're hardly an unbiased source since you are our head of e-learning, so you're obviously into it. But what do you see as the future? You know, what is this showing us about the future of higher education and e-learning and online higher education in general?
Oh, that's the $100,000 question. I also teach. I adjunct at some other universities, and I teach online. That doesn't mean that I don't really enjoy going to campus and meeting with my students. You can see that aha moment when a student gets it much easier if you're in a room together than when you're in an online situation. I do think this has broken down some barriers or some obstacles. Speaking from Lawrence Tech, I know there were some faculty that were a little resistant to online education. And my hope is that now they're seeing that they can still have those connections with the students. They can still have those conversations and get to know those students and really establish a relationship with students, which we know is so critical to education and to learning. I don't know if it's going to go all online. It's been kind of a ping pong back and forth over the last decade or so, but I do think this will remove some obstacles and maybe some blinders that some people had about what we can and can't do online.
Yeah, I know, you know, there's still that desire for the campus experience on the part of 18 to 22 year olds with, you know, a student union and sporting events and you know, dormitories mm-hmm. and all of that stuff. But I think this is especially instructive for the future of maybe continuing professional education, you know, advanced degrees, that kind of thing. And there's certainly room for a lot of blending in this. You know, you could have some courses that are both.
Yes. And if you look at some of the research, there's a lot of support for a blended format. It kind of takes the best of both modalities. So I'm hoping that faculty who are recording some lectures during this pandemic that maybe wouldn't have done that, and they're posting them for students to watch at home, that they can use those recordings, still have students watch them at home. And then when students come to class, they can engage in deeper learning events. They can do more simulations, more case studies, actually have more dialogue. We're shifting the lecture to home and we're doing the activities in class. Excuse me, it's usually called the flipped learning model, and mm-hmm. it can be extremely effective in certain courses.
Well, and what it also allows people to do is fit the schedule of higher learning to their schedule. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to be in class, you know, Monday, Wednesday, Thursday at 10 in the morning. They can do it whenever, you know, it's convenient for them. And I would think that might actually help enrollment rather than.
We're always looking to grow our enrollment. We have great programs. The trick is to get the word out there. But yes, I think you're absolutely right. It is a great way to grow enrollment. And again, if you look at the research for the students that do pursue an online degree, most of them are within a 45-minute radius of campus. It's not a distance barrier to them pursuing their education. It's a time barrier. So if we can put these programs online, they can pursue their degree in a way that works for their crazy schedule.
I think we're going to have to leave it at that. We're out of time in this segment. So
sounds
why don't you
good.
Go ahead and give the information up. People can reach out to you, Lynn.
You can email me at millerwi@ltu.edu.
Okay, I'm going to butcher the pronunciation of your name one last time, but I want to thank you for being with us today. It's Lynn Miller-Watisha from Lawrence Tech. She is our Director of e-Learning. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you. Stay safe.
All right, and we'll be back in just a minute with another segment of the M-Squared TechCast. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching at mitechnews.tv and a whole bunch of other places.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast here at PodcastDetroit.com, MITechTV.com, and wherever fine podcasts are available.
That's it. And we have with us from New York, Kelly List Wells, who's with the STEAM Leadership Alliance. Welcome.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about, first off, this may be the first time that anyone's heard of the STEAM Leadership Alliance. So why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, terrific. So first of all, thank you for having me today. The STEM Leadership Alliance, it's a collaboration that is really focusing on how to integrate STEM. So STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math, it tends to be this acronym that's thrown around. So what we have done is we've brought together the major STEM organizations, the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy, NASA, business, nonprofit organizations, and school systems to really start to think about that transformation of changing that word from STEM or STEAM or all of those other buzzwords to something that has a much more connected approach to it. So that's how this all started, and we're really excited about joining the show today.
All right. So let's talk a little bit about now. One of the examples I have on my list here that I'm looking at is a sample of the integrated, you got STEAM or STEM district occurring in District 6 in New York City. What's that all about?
Yes. So when we've started this journey, District 6 in New York City was one of these great examples to say that we didn't want just that word STEM to be this acronym. And basically having everything taught in silos and STEM being this buzzword. We were thinking of it beyond an after-school program or some activity that happened during the day, because when it happens that way, it really becomes very isolated. It's not truly about the equity and access. So District 6 took a very different approach. What they ended up doing is they worked with City College, they worked with the school system itself, and then they brought in some of their nonprofit partners as well and said, let's really have a conversation to say, we want STEM to be very grassroots. We don't want this to be forced upon any school, and we don't want it to be done in isolation. So we went through a training process to say, let's define what is integrated STEM. And what that basically means is that you're not looking at science being just science and math being just math. You look to find those authentic connections. You look at ways on how do the subjects. So a student who's in science class, they're not just doing math as the M in measurement, but they're really doing the fundamentals of mathematics, that deeper understanding that they need. And they're not looking at technology just as a tool, but they're looking at it as a resource. And then they're saying, well, how do we also incorporate English and social studies and art and all of those other subject areas? So that was the whole process that we started with District 6, is we started from the very grassroots, worked across with the schools. They came up with their own action plans. And then we rolled that up to say, now let's look at how do we create a vision and a mission for the district as a whole to say we are not just going to be a STEM school system, but we are really going to be this integrated district.
All right. Tell me a little bit about District 6. What part of the city is it, and what kind of sort of socioeconomic area is it?
So District 6 is in New York City. It's in the Washington Heights, so it covers part of Harlem. It's a very diverse school system there. There's approximately 39 schools that range from pre-K all the way up to grade 12. And again, you're seeing there's also a lot of diversity that is happening within the system there. You're also seeing a change of diversity because where you used to have a very large population from the Dominican Republic, it's now transferred to other groups. So it's become a real melting pot in terms of the community as well as the socioeconomics that exist there.
Interesting.
And then you also,
Go ahead, Mike.
Also worked with the Cincinnati, looks like, facilities support system where it saved $15 million. Talk about that example.
So in my previous role, I worked for a major corporation. And when we look at how business can work and support educators, we look at this from a variety of ways. It's not just going in and doing tutoring or mentoring or going in and cleaning a park or cleaning a school playground. We look at these as how do you leverage the resources? How do you leverage that mind power that business actually has? So for the example in Cincinnati, one of the things that the company did at the time was worked alongside the facilities manager of Cincinnati Public Schools. And they said we had several buildings. There was a very significant change in terms of demographics, students moving out of the city. So they leveraged the opportunity for the facilities manager to work alongside the facilities manager of the school district to really come up with a way to say, how do we change these plans? How do we look at buildings? How do we change that whole facility structure there? And that's where that cost savings came in. But again, when business goes in, we always business tends to think of it. Let's go in. We're going to do tutoring and mentoring. But there's a world of opportunities. And right now, what we really need business to also thinking about is how do we help educators during this new world of learning? And we just happened to hear from Lynn, who had, you know, talking about the shift of online learning. But a lot of the K-12 systems, they don't have that system and structure put in place. They need training. They need professional development. It's not always intuitive what to do when you're used to having a classroom of students. And now all of a sudden, you have 25, 30 plus faces that may be looking at you on a screen, but then not all students have the access to technology. So,
well, that's one of the things I neglected to mention with Lynn, and my boss is going to kill me for forgetting it. But LTU since 2000 has given every undergraduate student a laptop loaded with all of the software they're going to need for their courses. And when you have students with that kind of technology behind them, occasionally there are connectivity issues, but there's never a hardware or software issue because the kids come into school having that technology with them. I would imagine in a diverse urban school district, that could be a little bit tougher to cross that barrier. What have you done for that? What have you done to ensure students have technology at home?
So many of the school districts, as well as funders and supporters, have donated to help students have that technology. So whether it's using Chromebooks, whether it's iPads, but there's been a significant push across the country to get those tools into students' hands. The trouble, though, that goes along with that at the same time is that educators need to have support on how do you use this technology. So there are certain schools that have done this in an amazing way. There's a school actually in New York City, and what their whole learning platform before this even happened was students were actually taking their courses. They were creating their labs online. If they were in their math class, the teacher was teaching the subject and she had all of the students' laptops so she could see on another screen to make sure no one was doing something they shouldn't be doing. And they were extremely focused. But it also was able to provide students with those skills that if they weren't understanding a particular topic, the teacher could assign an assignment for them to go deeper. So there was all of that technology learning that was happening. So they were ahead of the game. But now we have thousands and thousands and thousands of teachers that are sitting there saying, I have to teach this online course, but they don't necessarily have the in-depth knowledge and understanding. And so we've gone back to teaching in a very traditional way in terms of that siloed approach. So you have math being taught, English being taught, social studies being taught, so on and so forth. But the problem with that is we want these kids to think about integrated STEM because this is how the world works. When you start around and integrate it and you start to connect those topics together, what happens is students become problem solvers, critical thinkers. They start to think outside the box and say, how do we change what we know, and how do we make the world a better place? So I think there's a lot that needs to still happen and that still needs to occur during this very challenging time. But at the same time, this is an opportunity to really provide that professional development and the knowledge and skills that teachers need. We can get behind them and help them as they're learning on these new platforms.
All right, we got about 3 or 4 minutes left. So I guess it's time to, we could talk a little bit about the Erie system supports.
Yeah, so in other districts too, some of the work that we've also done is we've also looked at, again, this is going back to business, to say it's beyond just thinking about in terms of tutoring or mentoring or those short skills that are needed. Instead, it's thinking the long term. So one of the other activities was there was the school system in Erie was looking at a new IT system. They had an old mainframe and they really needed to upgrade it. And that was a way that business could actually work alongside with the school system, not to make the decision for them, but to help them to understand the products, the technology, the needs, bringing that all together. That's where the magic happens, is when we look at this to say it's not an us versus them, or that we're only looking at test scores for student performance. It's when the school system can be embraced by looking at all of the needs that the system faces. So whether it's technology and leveraging businesses, leveraging their expertise, or colleges and universities leveraging their expertise to work with school system. When it comes to professional development for educators, which is an area that is highly underfunded, that they need support. So even when you bring in the technology, you have to do some additional training. School districts in Stamford, Connecticut, for example, did a boot camp, a technology boot camp for educators, those that weren't quite feeling comfortable with using it. So there's a lot of ways that we can empower educators as they think about these new tools and how to help them and support them in this very changing environment, which again, we don't know how long this is going to last, but we need to ensure that educators are highly supported and that we're working together with the resources and expertise that museums, nonprofits, higher ed, business, that everybody has, that we can really come together to wrap our arms around the students, but also wrap our arms around these educators and leaders that are really facing some challenging times right now.
All right.
Are you open to dealing with other school districts? Could people here in Michigan contact you for ideas and support?
Absolutely. So we're working with all school districts across the country. We're also working around the globe. And I think this is one of the pieces that's the most powerful, is the fact that we have the ability to learn with and from each other, not just within our own community, but from communities all over. So we would welcome, you can always reach out, look at the STEMLeadershipAlliance.org website, or you can always reach me directly too, which is at Kelly, K-E-L-L-I, List, L-I-S-T, Wells, W-E-L-L-S, .KLW@gmail.com.
All right, Mike, do you have any final questions?
Nope, that's it.
All right, thanks very much, Kelly Wells, for being with us here today on the M Squared TechCast. We'll be in touch.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? Everything. Great labs and studios, supportive professors, plus a full campus life, NAIA athletics, and all the software you need to succeed. Be smart. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Oh, we've lost.
Hey, it's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And well, there we go. The M Squared Tech Guest.
Yes, we have Eric Kippel, a former Detroit Lions quarterback, essentially during the 1980s. That was your era, right, Eric?
Oh, yeah. That was 10 years of the 80s. That was me.
I still
remember that breakthrough game you had on a Monday Night Football. That was a lot of fun to watch as a long-suffering Lions fan. So
that was a breakout moment, and it changed the course of my life. It was fantastic.
Yep.
Well, so since then, Eric has gotten involved in a number of things. He's working with the NFL. He's working with the military on life's transitions. Eric got banged up a little bit in football, and so he's dealing with a lot of the same issues that a lot of the former football players, a lot of the military folks are dealing with. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that, Eric?
Yeah, really. And it started with this background started when I was working at U of M, the University of Michigan Depression Center. And we were contracted by the NFL Players Association to look at depression rates for former football players. But through that research, what I found out, what I looked at, every single player had problems with the transition. And transitions are tough on everybody. It's not just former football players, but life transitions that change the direction of somebody's course of their life, especially if they're not expected or if they're unwanted. When a person gets fired, a person goes through divorce, a major move. And in certain populations, and like former players that wore a uniform, law enforcement that wore a uniform, veterans that wear a uniform, top executives that have their suits but their uniform, when they go through the transitions and all of a sudden aren't doing what they were wearing that uniform for anymore, that loss of purpose, that loss of identity, that loss of self-sense, and like I said, and mission-oriented stuff is gone. And that can be very painful and very disorienting. So I'll just pick up. So through that process, we started looking at how do you reconnect and how do you put programs together to make those connections. And one of those things that we did, I saw early on, was reaching out and having a community peer-to-peer reach out and connect. The reciprocal peer support model, which is built around call-in places, crisis centers, where you have a peer there of whatever population it is to get them to the clinical delivery. We flipped it upside down. Detroit Lions and our Lions alumni put together a peer outreach group. So we have 8 guys that are trained to do outreach calls. And so it's about communication. And it's about community and reconnecting and getting guys involved. And if somebody does have an issue, then we're there to help them. But really, it's about community.
Hmm. So you actually have a group of people that reach out to former Lions rather than waiting for them to call you, huh?
Yeah, and that's really the trick, because you know, we're not looking just for things that are when somebody's in trouble. We're actually trying to reconnect and give them tools, you know, to uplift them and reconnect them. So, you know, find out how they're doing, but also let them know that they're wanted. They belong to something. That lack of belonging when you leave something that you've done for so long is really part of the problem. And so reconnecting to that just helps, you know, the mental health and those and life events that you run into.
Yep.
And sort of tying it into what we're experiencing right now with COVID-19 and the fact that we're all locked down. There may be a lot of people out there that are having a real mental issue with this because they can't go to bars, restaurants, be with the family. They're like me and Matt sitting in our houses, and you. How can you help those kinds of folks?
Well, you know, that's a difficult thing because this is a major transition. Nobody knows what's going to happen when we come out of this either. And that's really going to be a major change. And when somebody's facing change like that, the worry, the anxiety, the maybe feeling helpless and feeling trapped and not knowing what to do, those things can really exasperate the anxieties that we have. And maybe maladaptive behavior starts to happen, like maybe I start drinking too much because maybe that was my tool. Or maybe, you know, I start getting angry and isolating. So I'm in the room by myself, even though my wife's in the other room, but I don't know how to deal with her because I can't communicate with her anymore. And so there's some really negative aspects of that. And so reaching out and connecting is an important way of solving some of those issues. The thing is, you know, we're working with a group that's kind of come together. One is Journey Pure, which is a treatment addiction center. There's Vanderbilt University, which through a doctorate student there that named Noah Robinson, who had the idea of going to virtual reality and dealing with his own addictions, but not just by going online and playing games. It's actually based around a model that was put together by Smart Recovery. They are good at doing telemedicine and connecting. But all those aspects of it is how do I engage somebody? See, I've got a, an opinion, but also kind of a mission, which is instead of waiting until somebody's in trouble and then getting to a clinician, why don't we raise everybody's educational level up a bit? And so maybe some of the things that I might fear or something going through a transition, I might recognize them and I have some coping mechanisms in place to do with it. So I don't get to that point where I really have to, you know, take drastic action. And that's really what this whole model is about. So the peer-to-peer through virtual technology, virtual worlds, we actually built a locker room. And so guys can feel comfortable going to a locker room. For law enforcement, you can build a station house, you know, where you start in that room. But really, the virtual reality piece is you can be in that place. You can create any type of room that you want, but still about connection. And so this is therapy-based. I shouldn't say that. It's not therapy-based. It is based on education through therapy ideas on how to raise the element up a little bit. So you can go to a place, still have fun, but yet there's educational tools around you that you're constantly involved in.
All right. Mike, there have been so many people laid off from newspapers in the last few years. I think maybe we ought to create a virtual newsroom.
Yeah. Yeah, we there
you go. All sit around. You can all sit around and toss the crap and find out what's interior.
Yeah, we all lived in the pod farms for all those years where you get the half wall with a person right next to you and you're all smushed in together and all that.
Yeah, yeah, you learn way too much about other people when you want them sometimes.
Ain't that the truth?
Well, see, that's one thing you can step out of the virtual world if you need to. You're not stuck there. So anyway, that's
right. So one of the groups that you have is something called After the Impact. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, After the Impact was After the Impact Fund. So afteritheimpact.org was actually created to help support veterans and former professional athletes go through treatment, help pay for treatment, go through transitional times when somebody is in need. But what it's become is more of a connecting factor. How do we connect these populations of veterans, maybe even crossover, because that's really where After the Impact got started, was at a treatment facility where we actually mixed veterans in with former NFL players. And what we found is one other way to cross is to handle a population is to cross with another population that might have some of the same feelings, some of the same things that they go through, that loss of purpose, loss of sense of direction, that they go through, and loss of identity. And yet they come from it at different angles. And so that what they do is they talk more, they communicate more. And so that's kind of the virtual reality through Help Club that we're trying to do, which is how do we bring different people together right now. Help Club is based on helping recovery through addiction. That's what it was kind of put together for. But as we see what, you know, and we're in the beta test right now, by the way. So we're in a 30-day beta test and tracking it. And so from that, we'll gather some information. But I already know that the peer-to-peer portion of that works in going into a community and be able to crosstalk. One of the things is through avatars and stuff, you could be, you know, I could be a 60-year-old guy walking into a locker room and there's a 30-year-old guy. But with my avatar, he doesn't know my age. And so the information I have might be really worth something to him. But he wouldn't give me the time of day if he saw me walk in the locker room as a 60-year-old guy. And so that's one of the aspects of it as well, is be able to give information and to learn from each other.
Huh.
So After the Impact, aftertheimpact.org is a funding arm that we use to help veterans and help former professional athletes and also help law enforcement to get those levels. And the outreach will continue to be on. The Detroit Lions peer-to-peer group, we've been together for 5 years, was deemed best practices by the NFL. And so we're starting to see some expansions, some other clubs wanting to us to come in and create some of these peer groups with them. And this is just going to be an added tool to be able to use virtual reality to do that and to have outreach.
You know, there's a lot of trauma from people that have been in the military, particularly those that have been in combat. How would that play out for that group?
Well, going through, there's already been, you know, tests done on and research done on PTSD and veterans going through, so they can go into like similar circumstances and kind of do a little bit of exposure therapy, be able to go to a peaceful place. In other words, you can actually slip on VR and go to a sanctuary somewhere that you've created. are a place you can be peace. So all the chaos around you can also just settle back down. It's the same tool that you'd use in meditation, but here you're actually in the physical environment of seeing something completely different and be able to interact in it. And so it has that aspect to it. But it also, tool building is one of the bigger things, I think, that, like I said, the veterans can have, be able to go back to that, you know, to the group that they were with, that they can connect with, that understands them. And so they can actually talk about some of the things that they're going, and to have a therapist in the next portal, next room away. So if you need to walk into that room and talk to someone, you can actually do it right online.
So it could be guys who are in the same unit together that maybe live in different parts of the country or the world that put on the headset and they're together again, right?
Yeah. In fact, the Polytrauma Center down in Tampa was using a VR scenario for this peacefulness type deal. They haven't used it for their for what we're using it for yet, but I think that's just around the corner. I think we're kind of one of the first ones to use it for peer-to-peer connection and learning and educational-based, CBT educational-based therapy.
Matt, you got something?
I was just curious. You had a pretty successful sales career, from what I understand, after football. So how did you happen to wind up connected with these groups?
Oh, man. You know, we all have a journey, right? You know, and so, and then we have some more major life events, okay, that changes that direction. And mine was changed drastically. I lost a son to suicide. And so one of the, he was 15 years old at the time. And that put me into the mental health world. It also put me into the grief world and pain world, and also the suicide prevention world. And so I've been, you know, for the last, you know, 18 years or 19 years, maybe, have been, you know, down that track, trying to find answers, answers to the question of how do we be preventative and yet educational, so we don't wait until something goes wrong before we do something about it. Right now, the way the medical field is set up is that when you go see a doctor, it's because, you know, something has happened, something's gone wrong. And because of that, right now we're seeing a lot of influx going into, you know, into mental health, and we're really not equipped with it from a psychiatric and therapy point of view. There's just not enough numbers to go. And so you'll have a 3-month wait before you get in somebody. So through different programs like what we're doing here, through FD Impact, through Dream Pure, through an educational based program called Be Nice, which is benice.org, which is right here in Michigan, it's in Grand Rapids, where it's a school-based program that actually tries to raise the level up of basic mental health education. Not, you know, school textbook type stuff. That's great. But stuff that you actually utilize and stuff in your talking and just understanding it. So it becomes second nature and normal in your normal behavior. So you can tag it with the term mental fitness if you want. Michigan High School Athletic Association stood behind it, and they had all 30,000 coaches were taught a little segment on this and their mental health training this year. And so to me, it's just raising that level and community and connection.
Yeah, I know. I do I do public address announcing for the high school that my kids went to, and the MHSA gives us commercials to read when we're PA announcing. Yeah. And there's been a big mental health push at the high school athletic level. So it's all part of the anti-bullying thing that they're trying to get through. So
that's a piece of it. But you know, somebody who's, you know, where do bullies come from? You know, I mean, sometimes somebody who's really angry, maybe the things aren't going for them. Maybe it's been an adverse childhood experience. So ACEs is what it's called. And so the more ACEs that you have, the more it affects your behavior as you age and get older. And so acting out behavior, risky behavior, maladaptive behavior, you know, so substance use, you know, crime. So trying to get in front of that is really, really where this is at. And I think it is. It doesn't have to be, you know, targeted to only in therapy do you get this. I think we can raise the level so everybody at some degree has a baseline of a little bit of information and be able to reach out and recognize when somebody's not doing well, but recognize when somebody's doing good. You know what I mean? Because that's really important too. You know, one thing about this crisis that's going on right now, we've talked about the negative aspects of it, but there are also some pretty good things too. There are some that, you know, if you take some of the stress away, you know, what's going to happen financially and everything else, take some stress away, people are actually having to face to be, you know, at home and look at each other, you know, eyeball to eyeball.
24/7. You know, yeah.
Well, right. Eric, we're about out of time for this segment, so why don't you get people how to get a hold of you and also how to get a hold of some of these programs online.
I can be reached at erickkipple.com. I can also, if you want information on programs that we're putting together, it's aftertheimpact.org. So aftertheimpact.org. And again, erickkipple.com. You can reach me there at the website.
And if you want to stick around, Eric, it's up to you. We're going to have Fred Braun on the next segment. If you want to stick around and participate in that, you're more than welcome.
I love Fred, man. He's fantastic. Yeah. So I'll be happy.
Yeah, he's an expert on these matters. So we're happy to have him. We'll be back in just a minute with another segment. For right now, it's Matt Rausch
and Mike Brennan.
And you're watching at mitechnews.tv.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching the M Squared TechCast. We're back.
We are, and we have with us once again Fred Braun, who is an infectious disease expert right out of Ann Arbor. He was on teams that helped develop testing for Ebola and HIV, and gosh, he's been in that field for more years than you care to count, right, Fred?
I guess so. Yes. How are you? How's everyone?
Good.
We've so far, so good.
Eric Hipple, former Lions quarterback, who's involved with a group called After the Impact that deals with mental health issues and a variety of other things. And so I know Fred and Eric know each other well, so we decided to carry them over into the same segment together. Now, Fred has given us he's been giving us updates here, but for the last month. So we have a list of things that that he's urging people to do during this epidemic pandemic. And the most one of them is he's wearing his mask, very good. And also, on the gloves, too. You got it all going. Okay, good. And then stay at home. You got listed twice here, so I know that's a big one for you, right?
Yeah.
Eric's ready to go. I'm on protection on me.
Saturday, I'm protecting mine, bro.
That's going to protect your brain, but not your lungs. Yeah,
right. Yeah.
I just want to show everyone the proper way to wear a mask, and you can see it. It's over my nose. Do not wear it under your nose. It doesn't help you. It's way under my chin. I've unwrinkled all of the mask completely, so it has enough flexibility that I can pull it all the way back and really get a tight seal around my face. It won't protect your eyes. And then to take it off, you know, you just reach behind your ear, both ears, and take the tabs and turn it inside out like that, throw it away.
Okay.
And for your gloves, you want to do the same thing. You take your glove. And you do it inside out, right? You turn it inside out when you take it off. And then you put this glove in the palm of the other one. And you turn it inside out. And you pull the whole thing out. And then you go wash your hands.
Then that way you're not touching the outside of the glove. Yeah.
All right. So one of the things we were talking about, I think you were listening to the previous segment where Eric was discussing what we're all going through now, lockdown. And socializing with our most immediate family but not seeing a lot of anybody else. And so it may be causing mental health issues. We could talk a little bit about that if you'd like.
Yeah. You know, there are a couple of things about that. First, I love the idea of virtual reality. I think it's a brilliant idea, and Eric's been promoting that through his organization After the Impact. And I think it's just a great opportunity to start using these tools more often. I think one of the things we all need to do is, if you can, get connected, get enough bandwidth by the devices you need in order to be remote. For example, last weekend, we had a remote Pictionary, and we all drew pictures, and one person was in Utah, one person was in Pittsburgh, and we had a great time with the family, just pulling it all together. And next weekend, we're going to do virtual, again, on using Skype and Zoom. You can, you know, have a birthday party. It turns out my daughter's having her birthday. So a few things you need to do. And if you don't have these things, go out and buy them. And have them delivered, order them online, have them delivered, and then have someone who knows what they're doing walk you through on the phone how to set them up and start to use them, especially when it comes to medicine. The telehealth area, last week we did a survey, and we found out that 58% of people who have chronic conditions who should be regularly seeing their doctors skip their appointments. Mm-hmm. Please don't do that. That's going to cause all sorts of problems in the health community. And then we'll have lots of eruptions of other diseases when we're trying to deal with COVID. And you don't want to get COVID when you go to the hospital. So, please use a physician who is on telehealth. Don't go to your physician's office. If they don't have telehealth, get a physician who does have telehealth. There's a list of those, or the doctor who you're using can give you a reference of someone who is capable of.
Yeah, I know. I had a regular checkup Friday with my doctor through an app called Helo, HEALOW, and that's what his office uses. There's a bunch of similar apps out there, though.
Healthcare Network's another great one. That's right out of Wixom that J&B has, for example. Care 24 is another one in the area. So there are a large number of them. They're all excellent, and you can really get almost everything you need, at least on a conversational basis, through the phone. So to the extent it's possible, using telehealth will at least keep your chronic conditions in order.
Uh-oh. All right. So Fred, tell me about it's been, you know, this is a personal question for me. It's been a little over 2 weeks since I went to the grocery store. I'm running out of fresh stuff. How should people handle that?
Yeah, to the extent possible, buy it online and have it delivered. And we've gone online recently, and we found out that there's kind of 2 week wait lists. So you may have waited just a little bit too long. If you can, since you're older, basically, if you're older and or have other conditions, you should really try to avoid going out. And there are social services that are willing to shop for you that are available through COVID-19 community. You can access them, and they'll bring the food. They have shoppers who will go out and bring the food to you. Uber can also do that, for example, in the area if it's available. And if all else fails, then try to have someone go for you. Someone in your family or a friend who's going to be shopping anyway, go for you. If they're younger, when we look at the sadly, when you look at the fatality in the space, 80% will be from people who are our age or have a compromising condition. Not we hear about the young, we know it's an issue, but the real issue is people like us, sadly.
I have gone out shopping, but I put on one of those N95 masks and I wore gloves. I if you go early in the morning, for instance, I'm not giving a plug for Myers, but on Tuesdays and Thursdays between 7 and 8 in the morning, it's supposed to be reserved for older people like Matt and I. I know you guys are young men, but of course, Matt is married to a much younger wife, so he can send her, right?
That's right. Well, a couple of things about shopping itself. Just try to keep 6 feet away from everyone. They should have squares marked out for waiting in line. If you can, use the automated checkout. Don't bring a bag you're going to reuse. Use a disposal bag, preferably out of paper, not out of plastic. COVID lasts 3 or 4 times longer on plastic than it does paper. There's now a new rule. They've just found out that COVID can be transferred through the air. And that's different than what we thought. We thought originally it was off surfaces, sputum off surfaces. And now it turns out that these aerosol pieces can stay in the air for up to 3 hours. So if you're in a room that's someone with COVID and so on, the longer you're with that person, the more likely you are to be exposed. And so to the extent possible, the new rule is 6 and 6. That means if you're waiting in line in the shopping mall, you should be 6 feet shopping for food. You should be 6 feet away from everybody if you can. When you're with that person to, in order to do what they need to do behind the plastic, you have them the credit card. And you should only spend 6 seconds or less with that person and move on. If you can't do that, you should avoid the interaction.
Wow. I'm sorry. To put that in perspective, the measles, which is really, really, that's under 3 hours, right? For the, that it can exist in airborne, correct?
Yes. The measles is incredibly, is the most infectious agent we know. And if you're in a room with one person with measles with 10 people, 9 of them will get it by within a half an hour of the contact.
Oh my God. But
that's that level.
But it's under 3 hours though, right?
Yes. That's correct. And it does break down quickly. Thank goodness.
But what I'm saying, so we're talking about COVID, is it's 3 hours. There's what they're talking about. So which is kind of the, okay.
Thank goodness COVID's about 4 times less infectious than measles, but it's still twice as infectious as the flu. So,
okay.
One of the things that I picked up over the weekend was the Surgeon General said our Pearl Harbor was going to be here in the United States in the next week or two. How bad do you think it's going to get?
This week is going to be a bad week. We're number 3 in the nation right now. It's not a ranking you want to hold behind New York, New Jersey. And you know, I was reading today that basically my colleagues and I are thanking God that we did not have the auto show this January.
Yeah, I saw that in the free press today.
I think otherwise we would have been number 1.
5,000 journalists coming in from around the world. You know, Matt and I have covered the auto show for years.
Absolutely. It's great. One of the greatest events. Lions football.
Yes, the Lions football. Of course, that's another great event.
Well, and you go to the new model introductions at the auto show, and there'll be 1,000 reporters cheek by jowl. You know, we're all standing on top of each other, you know. So.
And you're sitting together with in cars and, you know, would have been, and, you know, and holding things and touching things, and it would have been just a mess. So thank goodness.
Huh. So what other, we got a couple of minutes left. So other sort of tips or steps that people should
take? Yeah. Matt said he wanted to ask me about takeout and
takeout food. Yeah.
Who's preparing that takeaway food. And so, what I recommend, what most infectious disease specialists recommend, is you actually, have the food delivered to you if possible, if not, certainly outside the restaurant. You never go inside the restaurant anymore. And you pick it up and you, with your gloves, and you take it out of the pack with your gloves, and you replate the food, and you put it in a microwave, and it should boil for 2 minutes or more, over 2 minutes more. That'll kill all the bacteria as well as the viruses. It should. Mm-hmm. Don't eat cold food to the extent possible. Is sort of an invitation. And for if you do want it, you have a salad. You can ask them to keep the all the dressings on the side. Take the salad they've given you, or your own salad and fresh fruit. Put 2 tablespoons of baking soda into a glass of water. Swirl it around and use that to rinse off all of your fresh vegetables. It's not going to be enough to kill the virus, but it'll be enough to loosen it off, get it off the vegetables, and then run it under water in a salad spinner or in a colander for about 4 to 5 minutes.
Wow.
And take it out, put it on, put the dressing on, should be good to go.
So no more cold pizza for breakfast then.
Cold pizza is probably okay if you keep it covered. And it's yours. I wouldn't share any though.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're about out of time. So Fred, if folks want to reach out to you, and Eric, we'll go over your again as well. If people want to reach out to either one of you, why don't you give your internet addresses or email addresses, whatever you want to use.
Absolutely. It's fred.brown.ch, like Charlie Harry, @gmail.com. I wasn't the first Fred Brown on Gmail. I missed it by just about this much. So fred.brown.ch at Gmail.
And erichippel.com and afterTheImpact.org.
Okay, gentlemen.
I want to thank Fred, thank Eric, thank all of our guests here today. We will be back next Monday at 2 p.m. Eastern time in this format. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been watching the M Squared TechCast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for listening to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.